This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Cincinnati officials and a group of Black residents agreed earlier this year to settle a lawsuit that challenged the way the city gives tax breaks to homeowners. The lawsuit alleged the city's residential tax abatement program made the city more segregated and favored white homeowners who sought tax breaks. The settlement ended a fight in federal court that began in 2020, but did it accomplish the lawsuit's goals? Joining me now to talk about the lawsuit, the terms of the settlement, and what's next are Cincinnati attorney Robert Newman. Thanks for being here, Bob.
Sure, Lucy.
And Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks for having us.
We invited Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Pureval to be part of this conversation, but a spokesman for the mayor declined our invitation. Dan, this federal lawsuit filed in 2020 focused on the city of Cincinnati's residential tax abatement program. Explain briefly how that program works.
So essentially, this program is a system that allows tax breaks for home improvements for city residents. The floor on these breaks is you have to do at least $5,000 worth of home improvements to qualify. And I believe, Bob can correct me if I'm wrong, it goes up to about $750,000 is the top end. But basically, if you do home improvements and you apply and you qualify, you get a break on the amount of home improvement, a break on your taxes for the amount of home improvements you do for your home. So the issues that Bob's going to talk about here shortly, I think, are and that were raised in his lawsuit is that, you know, poor homeowners often were less likely to be aware of the program, less likely to qualify for the program because they can't afford to do as much work on their homes as wealthier homeowners. And so that raised a number of issues that precipitated this lawsuit.
Okay. And as I understand it, you'll both correct me if I'm wrong, if you have a $100,000 home, you put on a $50,000 addition, you qualify for this abatement, you're paying taxes as if the home is still worth $100,000, not $150,000.
That's correct.
Okay. And Bob, you argued in your lawsuit that the program has served to increase segregation in Cincinnati. Explain how.
Well, the vast majority of all the tax abatements have gone to the Eastern Caucasian neighborhoods, Hyde Park, Oakley, Columbia, Tusculum, and so on. The rate at which the tax abatements have gone to these suburbs, these white suburbs, is 100 times the rate that the lower income, mostly Black communities have gotten tax abatements. And what that has done is raised up what I call a segregative economic wall. The property values in the African-American neighborhoods have basically stagnated over the years. Most recently, of course, everybody has had a jump. But there's a vast difference between the property values in African-American communities and in Hyde Park. So the ability of any African-American homeowner to move up to Hyde Park or to Oakley is really impeded by the fabulously raising of property values in Hyde Park. They're building million-dollar condos with the benefit of tax abatements, million-dollar homes on Grandin Road and Observatory, and it's really become a richer and more white area in the city. And, of course, the African-American neighborhoods have become more and more Black as the neighborhoods have stagnated. So what the city is doing is subsidizing all these Caucasian well-to-do homeowners with it's a tax break, but it's really a tax subsidy because it's taxes they don't have to pay to the city. Instead, that money goes into their bank account and raises their property values and their personal wealth, and I call it their generational wealth. So it's really shortchanging all the African American homeowners in Cincinnati, and it will continue to do this.
Mm. Dan, the Inquirer did some reporting on how those abatements were awarded. I think you looked at the years between 2014 and 2018. What did the Inquirer find?
We found pretty much what Bob just outlined. You know, we found Hyde Park led the way with about $11.7 million worth of abatements during that five-year period. Mount Lookout, Mount Adams, Columbia, Tusculum, Oakley, over the Rhine, those were the only other neighborhoods that were over $3 million during that same five-year period. And to contrast that, two of the largest black majority neighborhoods, Avondale and Bond Hill, each received less than $1 million during that same period. And Westwood, the city's largest neighborhood, got about $300,000. So that kind of disparity is real. You know, the city didn't go into this thinking, you know, or planning that we're going to increase segregation, because I don't think they did. You know, the goal ultimately is to increase homeowners' value, improve neighborhoods, and to incentivize people to stay in their homes, make better neighborhoods. The issues that Bob is raising, though, point out some of the reasons why housing is so complicated in this city and every other city, because you have a lot of unintended consequences when you do stuff like this, and I think that's part of what we found.
Yeah. One unintended consequence, of course, is, according to the city records, and the city's expert report that they got from a firm in Pittsburgh is that between the years of 2017 and 2022, that five-year period, there were $200 million worth of subsidies total for citywide, 80% of which went to the Eastern Caucasian neighborhoods. That's $200 million that was lost in city revenues. So it's at the rate of about $40 million a year that the revenues were lost due to subsidizing new construction of very expensive homes on the eastern side of town. Hmm. Were they to eliminate the tax abatement program altogether, there would be an additional $40 million in the city general fund.
We're talking about the settlement of a housing discrimination lawsuit against the city of Cincinnati. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. I know Cincinnati City Council last year voted to change the residential tax abatement program, and that's a change that the mayor pushed for very hard. Dan, explain a little bit about what the city changed with that program. Didn't they have some tiers to try to spread these abatements out a little differently?
They did. It's pretty complicated. To oversimplify, basically, instead of just making it everybody, throwing it open to everybody, and the playing field's the same for everybody, they did try to create a tiered system that made it a little easier for people, for poorer homeowners to access this money. I don't know how effective that's been yet, but that was the primary goal. They also, you know, tried to do a little more outreach, I think, to try to make poorer homeowners more aware that this program exists, because when you're doing, you know, massive renovations on a home, hundreds of thousands of dollars, you're aware of the options you have to abate some of that value. Someone who does a patch of a roof or fixes a chimney for a couple thousand dollars may not know that they could potentially access a program like this. So they're also trying to do some more of that. Bob can probably speak a little bit more to some of the detail, but that's basically it.
Well, and Bob, as I understand, you and your clients asked the court to shut down that new program. Why did you think those changes wouldn't help? Or tell me about your kind of reaction to those changes in the program.
Well, what they did do was to reduce the maximum amount that could be tax abatable from $1 million to $750,000. So that was one part of it. Also, they reduced the time during which the people living in the Eastern Caucasian neighborhoods could get tax abatements, I think from 20 years down to 15 years. Very modest reductions. Our expert witnesses in the case looked at these and determined that it really wasn't going to change the segregative effect of the tax abatement program, only modestly, if anything at all. And that's why we continued in the lawsuit, saying that the new ordinance didn't go far enough. I must add that we did not accomplish in the lawsuit. What we set out to do was really make dramatic changes in the tax abatement program. And so there's another chapter, I think, to be written about the tax abatement program and potentially another lawsuit.
Yeah, I do want to talk to you more about that for sure. We did get an email about this program from Scott. Scott says, I think the only way to make the residential tax abatement program equal is by applying it across the board to all single-family owner-occupied properties. City would establish a budget that determines the amount of tax abatements the city can afford, then divide that out among all property transfers, a flat dollar amount to each. His email goes on, but he says, say the city can afford $1,000 abatement per property. Each transfer then gets that $1,000 abatement. For lower valued properties, that may erase most of their tax burden. For higher value properties, that might be a drop in the bucket. What do you think about that, that idea of just kind of having a budget, make sure everybody gets the same thing?
Well, I love people who think like this, and I wish we had more thinking going into the ears of city council members these days. But I think it's an idea, and we have to start thinking this way. But I don't think the Caucasian householders in Hyde Park are going to be satisfied with a $4,000 or $5,000 tax abatement. On the other hand, that is something meaningful to somebody who's living in Evanston, for example. I think what really needs to be done is to just back down pretty completely off of tax abatements and use the funds that you would gain from that back in the city budget and redistribute that money for home loans, for home improvements, for low income persons who need home improvements to keep in their houses. I mean, there are a lot of folks these days who are just on the brink of losing their houses due to these recent tax increases, and also because of the in some gentrifying neighborhoods like Madisonville, where the tax abatements have driven property values way up, surrounding long-term homeowners who were surrounded by this new fancy development, and their property values are going up to the point that they can't afford to live in Madisonville anymore, and the Madisonville makeup is changing radically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've certainly heard concerns about that from residents on this program. Dan, I want to stress again, we invited Mayor Purevall to be part of this discussion. His spokesman declined the invitation, but he made it clear last year that he really thought this revamped program that had these tiers and changed these limits would help make the residential tax abatement program more accessible for Black homeowners, more fair. I know that you and your colleague Sharon Coolidge did a story about this settlement that was reached. What did you hear from the mayor when you all reached out to him for comment about this settlement?
Well, he sent us a statement. I could read it. He said, since taking office, we worked to make our residential abatements more impactful and accessible to the folks who need it most. So it's a matter of debate whether that they've achieved that goal or not, but that's where he's at. And, you know, to his credit, they did try to do something about the program, which, as Bob has pointed out, have been under fire for a number of years. And it's also important to note, you know, abatement programs have been controversial for decades. I mean, this is a way that, governments try to incentivize, you know, behavior in any number of markets. And so abatements in general are a controversial issue, and how they're used in communities can have an impact that goes well beyond just individual homeowners. Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment, and later in the program, we'll hear from survivors of the 1974 super outbreak of tornadoes. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about a settlement in a lawsuit against the city of Cincinnati that challenged the way the city gives tax breaks to homeowners. My guests are Cincinnati attorney Robert Newman and Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dan, I want to talk a little bit more about why this is such an important issue. What has the Inquirer's reporting found when it comes to segregation in Cincinnati and families' financial security? You found a real correlation there, haven't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, particularly when it comes to housing, we've done a lot of stories in the past few years that look at affordable housing and some of the issues around it in Cincinnati. And, you know, what we found in census data and any other number of sources back this up, that Cincinnati is a city of renters. It's about two-thirds of the people in this community are in the city are renters. And it is a city of poor renters. About a third of those are considered burden renters because of the amount of money they spend on their rent. And so this issue of housing or of home ownership and the abatement program there matters a great deal in regards to that because it helps determine who gets to become a homeowner. So while a lot of these policies may be on their surface, you know, income blind and color blind, the reality is that when they are implemented, there are consequences. And some of those consequences adversely affect lower income and often people of color. Mm-hmm.
We got an email from Brian. Brian emails, race isn't tracked in the abatement program, so there's no way for anyone to know the race of people who receive them. Why are they surprised that a program to incentivize investing in your house is going to neighborhoods where people have the income to invest? What do you think about that, Bob?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of different ways of tracking who is getting tax abatements. For example, the million-dollar condos at 2660 Observatory, one can observe who lives there, and they're all Caucasians. And, of course, Hyde Park, in every census taken and every other counts in between the census show that it is becoming more and more white. And that's what the expert witnesses indicated in the lawsuit.
We have a caller on the line. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling. What is your question or comment?
Hey, Lucy. Well, I wanted to thank you and your guests for being willing to have this conversation. It's a complicated issue, especially one that involves race, and it's nice to have an intelligent conversation about it. But my comment was just about tax abatements in general. To me, the tax abatement program really hasn't done much overall. Like your guests were saying, the well-to-do neighborhoods really got a handout because they were probably doing work that they were going to do anyway, and the less well-to-do neighborhoods can't make much of it because it requires having money up front in the first place. So the whole program, even though its idea is nice, really doesn't seem to be lifting the neighborhoods in the way it hoped to. I know the new tiered system is going to do a better job of it, but still definitely work to do.
Thanks for that comment, Tom.
Amen.
Bob agrees. We also got an email from Steve from Oakley. He writes, as a longtime owner of a house in Oakley, 44 years, who pays 100% of the real estate tax, I witnessed how well-connected developers receive tax abatements for 6- and 7-digit homes while receiving support of the community council as the request went to city council for approval and were approved without exception. My view was if people could afford the homes being built, they could afford the taxes. Meanwhile, we 100%ers continue to carry the load. Is that a problem with equity too, Bob, in terms of who's paying their fair share?
It sure is. Mm-hmm. And he's hitting the nail on the head. They're just I would estimate that there's a majority of people in Hyde Park and Oakley that are against tax abatements because it's raising their property values who don't get tax abatements and they're having to pay higher taxes themselves having done nothing to their house. In addition, there have been a lot of teardowns of very nice houses and of course, more expensive new houses are being built in their stead. Grandin Lane, for example, where there's a whole new subdivision of million-dollar homes where there used to be just a couple of houses. And the neighbors next to these new multi-million-dollar homes are resenting the fact that their taxes are going to go up because of the general rise in property values that the tax abatements cause to the neighborhoods.
Yeah. Thanks for that email, Steve, and thanks so much for your call, Tom. Bob, one of the filings in your case argued, and I'm simplifying here, I didn't go to law school, so you'll have to forgive me, that in some ways this is worse than redlining because of the long-term permanent impacts this policy has. Talk with us about that.
Well, redlining obviously can be erased by a governmental action, a prohibition on against banks redlining. And you can start out a totally new chapter in lending. But with tax abatements, the value conferred on a tax-abated house, whether it's $100,000 or whatever, is built into the capital of the property, and it stays there, and it doesn't go away. You can't take it back out. So that's the difference. It's a much more permanent phenomenon, and that's why dealing with the segregative effects of tax abatements is much more intractable. And if you continue tax abatements as they are, we're going to get more and more segregated as a city. And there are personal and human effects of segregation that mustn't be forgotten. One of the studies that our experts did was to track African-American kids in African-American neighborhoods and what their income was 35 years later, and it is substantially less than African-American kids who migrate out of those neighborhoods and have contact with, in a real world, mm-hmm. contact for jobs and whatever else.
Yeah, more diverse community.
That's one effect. But mm-hmm. there are many bad effects of racial segregation in housing. Another one is that it really affects white people. It gives them a confused sense of what the real world is all about.
Bob, you and your clients did reach this settlement with the city earlier this year. What terms of the agreement made you all decide that a settlement was the way to go? What's in there that you think maybe could help?
Well, first of all, I represented 31 plaintiffs. And I was the lawyer for the plaintiffs, and they have the right of deciding when the case is going to settle and what it's going to settle for. Judge Black told us that he wanted the case settled. He was very firm about that. At the time, we were only seeking injunctive relief. But to get the case settled, the city put money on the table, and my clients told me to see how much money we could get from the city. And they eventually came up with $160,000 to be split among the 31 people. And then we paid off the expert witnesses and the expenses, but there were no attorney's fees in the case, by the way. Mm-hmm. So each of the 31 people got $3,500. Mm-hmm. So I made 31 people happy, modestly happy, I should say, mm-hmm. very modestly happy. But the goal was to do something more, and so I didn't achieve the goal of changing the tax abatement program. That needs to be done, and there's more fights to be undertaken.
Well, what was there, aside from the financial compensation for your clients, which was, important to them, not life-changing probably, but important to them, was there anything in the settlement that the city agreed to do that you think will be helpful to Black homeowners as a whole?
Yes, there were some things, and I think Dan mentioned them earlier, that they're going to market the program in the African-American community. There's going to be a liaison person to assist people with the process, which is complicated, and a number of other things. And I'm grateful for these small steps. And look, I think the city council consists of people of goodwill, and the mayor is a person of goodwill. It's a matter of recognizing this problem, and it's a difficult problem, and coming up with better solutions for it. And I hope that they'll be able to work with those who want to change the system short of another court fight. But time is a wasting, and their lawyer is an old dog. That's me. So I hope to get something done in the near future.
Well, you mentioned that the overall goal of this lawsuit was not accomplished as far as you're concerned. So what's next? Where do you and your clients or perhaps new clients go from here?
Well, we're going to have another report from the expert witnesses in the fall to show that, in fact, Cincinnati is getting more segregated and the tax abatement program is producing that result. So that once that's recognized, I hope that's going to spur council to take action and to draw back the tax abatement program. There are any number of ways to modify it to reduce the trend of segregation. And that is what is key here.
Mm-hmm. And if they don't take action, is another lawsuit in the future?
I anticipate that there will be.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati attorney Robert Newman and Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
Up next, we'll hear from survivors of the 1974 super outbreak of tornadoes. This is Cincinnati Edition.